House Committee on Information Management and Technology will now open. Today we have the Public Employees Retirement System, Paul and Jeff. A little informal there, but... And we're going to talk about Public Employees Retirement System today, and I don't have any committee announcements. Do you have any committee announcements?
None.
Mr. Chair? Thank you. And with that, we'll give it to you.
Thank you, Chair Dallum, members of the committee. I'm Paul Clary, Executive Director of the Public Employee Retirement System, also known as PERS. And with me today is Jeff Marisik, our Chief Information Officer. We appreciate this opportunity to appear before you here today, particularly since it's St. Patrick's Day, and we see that a number of us are respecting some of the traditions associated with that. I was over in Ireland last spring, and I introduced myself to one of the locals, and he said, "Well, you've got the right last name, but as soon as they hear the accent, the price goes up." So I don't think I can pass myself off as an Irish, but I can certainly wear the green. We're here today to both give you an idea of some of the background with some of the challenges that we face that our information technology initiatives are aimed at helping us with, as well as give you an update on what we're doing with a major project conversion. We've got our slides, and we're not using slides, but we're using a handout. If you look from today's agenda, I'll cover some of PERS history, some of the current environmental issues that are affecting our information technology system, both operational, legislation, and litigation-wise. And then Jeff will take over and start going into the details on our Information Service Division, our current technical environment, agency readiness, a key issue that we're facing, some of the multiple initiatives that they've got within our Information Service Division. Then we'll talk about RIMS conversion. I would say RIMS is our legacy system, our retirement information management system. I think it's kind of a 1980s vintage system, but we'll use that term RIMS if that's okay with the committee. We'll talk about some of our other technology projects and activities, participation in statewide initiatives, and then questions and comments, and certainly we would welcome questions at any time during our presentation. Turning the page, I'm on page 2 now, slide 3. PERS really is kind of a relatively young agency compared to the two agencies that I used to administer, both of which were created at statehood. This PERS was created in 1945. Our first major reform occurred in 1953, and that's also when we entered into the federal Social Security system. Prior to that, state and local governments were excluded from Social Security. There was an opportunity for that coverage that was provided in 1953, and that's what happened with us. We also had another major reform in 1967, and the creation of the Oregon Investment Council. And I should note that we're a pension system that has a separation of duties. Some pension systems handle both the data and the investments. Here in Oregon, they decided, and indeed in 1967, they implemented a separation of responsibilities, if you will. So we take in data, we take in money, we transfer the money to the Oregon Investment Council for investment purposes. We then manage the data all the way through a member's lifetime, and when it comes time, there's an event, a death, a disability, a divorce, or a retirement, we link the data and the money back up together and pay the benefit. In 1971, we included retiree health insurance plans. Again, Oregon has got some unique features there. We don't provide retiree health insurance. We provide a subsidy of $60 a month for people who are Medicaid eligible or Medicare eligible, and then there's another small program for retiree health insurance. But unlike some systems that actually pay the entire premium, we don't do that in Oregon. 1995, we created the Tier 2 benefit plan. 2003, was the PERS reform legislation that was the subject of the Supreme Court ruling last week. So here we are now in 2003, a number of challenges. We at that time we faced a unfunded liability that was estimated in the $17 billion range, projected to be in the $17 billion range. We had multiple litigation. We had some pretty significant organizational issues. The reform legislation came into effect. We had to, in a very quick time period, implement the new retirement system, which covers employees that were hired after August 29th, 2003, which is a hybrid system, both a defined benefit system as well as a defined contribution plan. A number of other features that I won't go into detail on that we were implementing from that reform legislation. And going forward, we now have a retirement plan that's got multiple components, if you will. We've got a Tier 1 component. We've got a Tier 2 component. We've got the pension component, which we call OPSERP, the Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan, again for new hires, and then we've got this defined contribution component, which we call the individual account program, the IAP account. Other major changes from the reform legislation, a total revamping of our governing board. We now have 5 members on the governing board, 3 from the private sector, no personal connection to any PERS benefit, and one representing members and one representing public employers. In terms of our office locations, we've got we're up in Tigard, our main headquarters, but we've also got a building about a mile away from our main headquarters that we had to lease space in order to handle the workload associated with the reform legislation, as well as the major spike in retirements. And then we've got a small outpost here in Salem that's located in the archives building, some 15 people or so that work the Oregon Savings Growth Plan, which is a deferred compensation program, as well as provide services primarily for employers that are in the Mid-Valley area and in the state complex. We've got over 300,000 total members, about 100,000 which are retired, 200,000 active and inactive. We get member data from about 875 public employers spread across the state. We cover local governments that are enrolled in the PERS system, all school districts, all state agencies, community colleges, university system. We'll have members varying from or employers varying in size from one employee, and maybe that employee's even working just half time, all the way up to what you'll see at the Oregon Health Science University System, the Oregon State Payroll System, 34,000 state employees, I think. So we've got a huge variety of scale in terms of the employers that we interact with, and I think you'll see one of our key efforts, of course, is try to make it as easy as possible for those employers to interact with us, recognizing that they've got a huge spectrum of different technological capabilities and human resource capabilities. We do a lot of work with the employers because we've discovered that if we can help them get the information in right, it makes it a lot easier for us to handle it over the long term. We do get about 3 million contribution demographic data records annually. Again, we just got some workload things here, about 300,000 phone, emails, and letters, and 30 million member document records that are on microfilm, with a million more added every year. Multiple plans, multiple systems with plan administration. We've got, again, the RIM system, what we call J-Clarity, which is the new technology platform that we purchased and have been configuring to implement the House Bill 2020, the OPSERP program, the new program that came in 2003. Unfortunately, even with all of these systems, we still, because of system limitations and poor data quality, have to do a lot of calculations manually. And in fact, in 2004, all of our retirement calculations required some manual intervention, and about 50% had to be handled completely manually. And for us, that injects a lot of course, additional effort, manpower needs, injects opportunity for error, injects the need to have close auditing, and sometimes, unfortunately, the fact that you have to do work over again. So we're very interested in moving forward with the technology platform that will help us reduce the amount of manual calculations that we have to do. I'm going to flip to the next page here. We certainly are an agency that if we had even workload, it makes our lives easier, but we do not have even workload, as you can see from this graph on chart number 7. An increasing workload, and then we have several spikes and valleys associated with that. And you can see that we actually spiked in 2003 at slightly over 12,000. I think it was about 12,800 retirements that we processed. So obviously we've got to have a flexible system in order to be able to handle those kinds of volume changes. I would point out that we've got about 40,000 members eligible to retire. And for us, it's just a question, are they going to go out at 5,000 a year over 8 years, or are they going to go out in 2 years? Obviously, we'd prefer the 5,000 over 8. I think I've covered a number of this, the legislative reforms that went into effect in 2003, but you can see on slide 8 some of the various features. I guess I would point out that from the Supreme Court ruling, the key provisions that got changed was the Tier 1 earnings factor, as well as the COLA fees provision. Those were in House Bill 2003. The rest of them were not affected by the ruling. But I think that, you know, the key point with this slide is that, you know, the current deficiencies that we've got in our system really inhibit any kind of quick turnaround to accommodate legislative changes. And we know that going forward, we're going to face legislative changes. There's always bills associated with PERS in every session. Some of them are minor, some of them may be major. So one of the features that attracted us to this new technology platform was the flexibility that it had to accommodate changes as we move forward. I've talked some about the litigation. I'm on page 5, slide 9 and 10. City Eugene litigation, which is also known as the Lipscomb litigation, that's what's still in front of the Supreme Court. So we don't have the ruling yet on that particular litigation, and it obviously has implications for employers, members, and our information technology system and the work that we may have to do implementing that ruling. The Strunk ruling was the one I just referred to. It was they came out with last Tuesday. Again, a challenge to the 2003 reform legislation, and we're still working on estimates of how much work we have to do over because of this, because obviously one of the impacts was we didn't credit members anything in 2003. Under this ruling, we have to go back into every account and credit them 8% earnings for 2003 and then carry that forward. We also implemented a COLA freeze that affected about 22,000 retirees that we have to undo. But we're, because of the interrelationship with the City of Eugene ruling, we're looking seriously at trying to, and we're going to talk with our board at the end of the month here, trying to set out a strategy that we don't undo things just to do them again. We want to get good at calculations, but we don't need to do them 7 times to get good at them. If we can only have to touch them once, we're going to be a lot better off. We do have a couple other court cases that I won't go into in any detail, but we're, you know, I used to work in the water environment, and there we used to say that whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting. Here, unfortunately, as you can see, it's also whiskey's for drinking, retirement's for fighting. Thank God there's one constant in this. But with that, I might turn to Jeff. Chair Dowman, unless you want to...
Do you have any questions before we start?
I'm going to wait until we hear...
Okay.
Rest,
Thank you.
Chair Dowman, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Marisik. I'm the CIO for PERS. As Paul mentioned in his comments, the impact of a lot of the operational and other issues that we have at the agency, of course, flow down into the information technology area, and I'd like to address some of the issues that we're facing there, and in particular, talk about a major implementation project that we have coming down the road, and some of the justification for that, as well as the planning efforts that we have gone through. To describe the technology environment at PERS just very, very briefly, there are about 350 or so agency users in three locations. As Director Cleary had pointed out, we have our 875 employer users, and they range in technical capability also from very little to quite a lot. And so we're dealing with receiving information from 875 different employers in a lot of different formats, and we're responding working with each of the employers to do that as effectively as possible. Just as a side note, we have our website, and we have approximately 9,500 users visit that website every month as well, for things such as downloading forms, and we have a web calculator online and those types of things. We're providing those kinds of services. We've mentioned several times the retirement information management system. It's our main line of business application that we're currently using to manage the the Chapter 238 plan. That's a system that was developed in the mid to late 1980s and was adequate at the time, but as we moved into the mid-90s and late 90s, it began to deteriorate rapidly because of the technology and skills that we had at the agency in order to maintain that. The platform that it exists on, it's a mainframe-based system, and it is written in a language called COBOL, which by today's standards is a little bit clunky and difficult to manage. In addition to that, the documentation for the system over the course of the last 20 years or so leaves a lot to be desired. The documentation isn't as adequate as it could be, therefore making any major modifications to the system difficult and time-consuming. Not that they can't be done, but it takes a little more effort to get them done. And what we see as we move through the legislative changes in some of the court cases is that the functionality of the system quickly and steadily is declining, based on the fact that many of these decisions and some of this legislation requires changes to the system, and so there becomes a backlog in system modifications in order to try to keep up with these various changes. One example that we've recently completed is what we call the AEF project, or it was a provision in House Bill 2004, the Actuarial Equivalency Factor change. It was a project that took 8 months of staff work and contracting work to complete, and about $500,000 in order to complete that project. Most of that time, most of the 8 months, was spent in analysis of the system, sorting through close to 400 programs and 1,000 reports and probably 15 or 20 different data stores to identify the appropriate places in which to change the system so that the functionality can be added to the system and so that we didn't have any downstream effects to member accounts as these changes were put in place. And so the takeaway on that is that our current RIM system has become an impediment to retirement plan administration rather than a facilitator of it. And so we find agency staff needing to make workarounds to the system rather than having it work with it. And that's a key component to our need to replace the system. Our other major line of business application is, we call it J-Clarity. And that's the system that we are currently implementing to handle and administer the OPSERP program, the new pension plan. That's a project that started in the fall of 2003, and we are probably about three-quarters of the way through that. Our expected delivery completion date on that is August 2005, so a few months hence this year. That system is based on new technologies, technologies that are easier to program, easier to use, and easier to modify. And it's what we term a commercial off-the-shelf piece of software. It's a piece of software that is not being built from the ground up out at the agency. It's not the type of system where we're creating it at the agency. Rather, we've purchased the system and we're installing it and converting our business rules and data into it. This is important because, for obvious reasons, one is PERS is not in the software development game, we're in the pension plan administration game. And so we don't necessarily look at ourselves as software developers on the same scale that you might Microsoft or some of these other types of agencies. And so we are benefiting from the commercial off-the-shelf package because it has calculation routines built into it, for example. It has screen designs built into it. The databases already have the appropriate data fields and those types of things, and what we need to do is configure it to match our system. So we get a head start, if you will, by using this strategy moving forward in terms of the implementation of it. There are web-based components also to the J-Clarity system, which allows better access to information for members, staff, and other stakeholders as well as employers. Those 875 employers that we talked about earlier can now submit their information to the system over the web, and so they'll be sending files to us and we'll be able to automatically import them into this new system rather than paper files or tapes or some other form. And we plan, obviously by the end of, within 2005, we will be providing online access for members so that they can look up their particular information, do accurate web calculations and those types of things online for members. J-Clarity is, the takeaway here is J-Clarity will become the platform for pension plan administration at PERS, including what we intend to do with our RIMS conversion. In fact, we'll speak a little bit more about this in a few minutes, but we've chosen this J-Clarity platform to also manage the Chapter 238 plan, which is currently being administered using the RIMS system. So we'll convert our legacy system to the new technology. I wanted to spend just a few minutes talking about other types of technology. I won't read it bullet point for bullet point off slide number 13 on page 7, but it's just a way to let the committee know that there are other things going on besides these two systems. We are using, in a partial way, RSTARS, which is the state financial systems, the general ledger, and we will see a little bit later that we intend to more fully implement that during 2005. We have microfilm. We have a very large microfilm index operation as well. As Director Cleary pointed out earlier, We have close to 330 million records now on microfilm. These are paper documents that members send in, into the system that are either requesting data or providing data to us, and we microfilm those so that we store a complete record. Now, those records right now are a little unwieldy to manage because they are on microfilm, and at times when staff needs large volumes of these, there's a section of the information technology division that goes to the microfilm, prints them out on paper, and delivers them to who needs them. And we have a strategy in place to alleviate that as well, as we'll talk about later. The upshot of slide 13 is that we have a number of different applications in addition to RIMS and jClarity, many of which use different technologies, different databases, different programming languages, and such. And what we intend to do is to reduce the amount of diversity or technological diversity at the agency, so that it makes it more easily supportable. For example, databases that we use at the agency, we have several of them. We have DB2, we have Oracle, we have Access, we have SQL Server. Well, it's very difficult for relatively small agencies such as PERS to have expert skills in everything. And so the more we can streamline and standardize on certain technologies, the better able we are to provide that kind of support. Slide number 14 on page 7 discusses, as well as the next four slides, talk about some of these issues that are facing the agency and how we are dealing with them. And we call it a focus on agency readiness. When we talk about a focus on agency readiness, what we're really talking about is the agency's ability to take on a major conversion project such as what we call the RIMS conversion project. And the reason that it's important to focus on this is because the bottleneck we find in implementing technology, as well as some of these other projects that we have, whether they're technology related or not, come from our business expertise that we can apply to the system. So if we flip to page 8 and talk about slide 15 for a moment, and the next four slides actually build on each other, and we'll be able to move through relatively quickly. But when we talk about agency readiness, we look at what I've termed a typical IT project, but that's probably a misnomer. The right term there should be an ideal IT project when you have systems and technology that actually are working well for you. So it's not so typical at the state. And what I'd like to point out is on the left, the oval represents a generic project or a problem that has occurred in the agency, and then usually the way we get it done is we align our IT resources, our subject matter experts, which are business expertise throughout the agency, and occasionally we'll have to contract out to an external vendor, perhaps if it's a very large project. But we coordinate those efforts and streamline them into what we term a permanent solution, and usually that happens very quickly and seamlessly, and off we go. The problem is solved, and we move forward. The second slide number 16 on that same page talks about a complex project that happens at PERS. And the reason that suddenly we have more arrows and more lines and those sorts of things is because RIMS is, as we mentioned, a complex system, difficult to enhance and upgrade. So when we come across a very complex problem or complex project, there is usually a fairly long time lag between when the problem is recognized, when you need a solution, and trying to get benefits out the door. And so what happens is the agency is put into a two-solution scenario where they have to some way have an interim solution so that we can effect the change necessary in the short term, even though it may be a manual effort, while the technology solution is being developed. And so this slide is showing that when we get into that situation, we are double taxing our subject matter experts, because not only are they doing the manual solution in order to get the benefits out the door, so to speak, they're also working with our technical staff in terms of providing requirements for the project that needs to be done. And so we have a double hit on a very select small group of people that have the knowledge of the agency. If we then move to slide 17, we just load it up with the same idea, and we have a number of projects in play at any one time, and you'll see the places where you have a lot of arrowheads coming into the triangles is in the subject matter expert spot and in the IT resources area, and that begins to overload the agency. Now, this slide was done, I believe, in the summer of 2004, and it represents six projects on the left out of 25 active projects that we had at the time. And so you see the nature of this type of an issue when very few resources are utilized very heavily in order to get these projects done. And the final slide is kind of a to-be slide, or maybe that's where we wish to be at some point, where the technology solution then can keep pace with the activities that we have at the agency, and the interim solutions are no longer needed. And that's where we're headed. And I'll speak a little bit more about that in a few moments. The Information Services Division is comprised of five sections. A technical operations section, which is where you would normally find your help desk and operations folks, your application support people and such, mainframe support and those types of things. We have a software engineering section, which is our, for all intents and purposes, our development staff, and that's comprised of programmers, requirements analysts, process mappers and those types of business analysts, the types of people to help design the system. We have our image and information management area, and that's the microfilm area that we spoke about a little bit earlier. They manage the records of the agency and workflow. We have a quality assurance section at PERS that gets engaged anytime we have technology projects to ensure that they're fulfilling the need and that they are delivered with a high level of quality within the agency. And we have a new section that we're just currently forming now, and that's the data quality assurance section, one of our key problems at the agency that tends to slow things down in terms of our ability to provide calculations through the system is poor quality data in some cases. So we have 875 employers, and as we mentioned before, data comes in different quality, in different levels of quality, and we need to attack that problem very aggressively over the coming year, so that as we do a conversion to a new system, we'll be able to implement it with high quality data. So that group is forming now. So what are the information services initiatives that we have underway right now? The first one, and I think probably the most important one that we have on the list here, is to secure business operations input into all technology projects. There seems to be a tendency sometimes in some agencies, and certainly it was out at PERS, where the information services division was driving the bus, so to speak. And so oftentimes technology solutions didn't necessarily match up with what the business expectations were and some of the business needs. We have since developed several procedures to ensure that. We've established a project steering committee, for example, at the agency that prioritizes all IT-related projects and ensures that each one has a business owner rather than an IT owner of it. We also have a team called the Business Enterprise Team that dives down into some of the details of these system changes that we have to ensure that the appropriate system modifications are being made, and again, that each modification has a business owner. We've also taken some initiatives to prioritize projects on a agency level. Prior to us starting this initiative, each division was prioritized with their own IT initiatives, and when you do that, all the roads lead to the IT department or the ISD area, and everybody's problem is high priority. And so from an IT perspective, we could do nothing other than disappoint a lot of people at the same time because we try to juggle too many high priorities. So what we've done is through the use of our project steering committee and the business enterprise team, we've been able to bring all of those projects together administrators and managers in charge and prioritize those based on what the agency needs most. That way we're much better able to utilize both our business resources and our technical resources to accomplish projects. And there are some others on there that I'm not going to read or go into as much detail, but we've strengthened our internal project management area, and we're applying standard project management techniques to any large project now, whether it's an IT project or not, at the agency to ensure success. And we've developed a comprehensive replacement strategy for RIMS that I'll get into in a few minutes. We also need to continue modest investments in RIMS because what we're finding is that if we don't keep pace with some of the major changes that need to be done in the RIM system, it tends to fall out in manual work for some of our business people. So we need to provide the tools so that we can enhance their ability to do work within the system so that we could free up time to do some of our other initiatives. Flipping the page then to page 11, project slide number 21. We have some other initiatives that we can go through very quickly. Data warehouse, access to information is very important for the agency, and we're going to be developing a comprehensive data warehouse that has end-user reporting tools with it. We're going to convert what we do now for microfilm. Instead of printing microfilm out onto a piece of paper and sending it to the staff member that needs it, we'll be workflowing that. We'll be imaging our documents and providing those online so that agency staff have access to them much more quickly. In addition, we've established a comprehensive information management or information security program at the agency. As you can imagine, the type of information that we have at PERS, social security numbers, salaries, home addresses, employers, those types of things are the types of things that identity thieves are really looking to get their hands on. And so in order to minimize the risk that we have there, we've established a information security program as well. It takes care of both the technology aspects of information security, those things that you might read about in newspapers about hacking into systems, but also an internal view of information security as well. What we find in the literature is that between 70% and 90% of all information security breaches occur from within and not necessarily from hacking from outside. And so we're developing and rolling out policies and technology from within the agency as well to protect the information that we have. I've already talked about the data conditioning program and reducing the diversity and complexity of the IT environment. So our goal in information services is to transform IT into a business partner, a process enabler, and a tool for success at the agency. Now I'd like to talk just a few minutes about the RIMS conversion project and what we see before us in terms of how this will lay out. We anticipate a three-stage project. The first stage is planned to be a 14-month stage. within which we will deliver member self-service. We'll be migrating some of the demographic data from our RIMS application into jClarity. We will provide a new and updated web-based benefit estimator online. We'll do service request tracking, some workflow, cash receipts, and the GL interface. Stage two, which is projected to be a 16-month stage, will provide staff with member account maintenance capabilities, refund capabilities, optional service credit capabilities, and we will enhance our workflow throughout the agency to make sure documents and information get routed properly from organization to organization within the agency. And stage three, again, is a 14-month effort, and will include benefit account adjustments, pension payments, cash disbursements, and benefit recipient self-service. Our strategy includes a gradual and planned decommissioning of RIMS. When we were delivering our presentations to JLCIMT, several of the committee members made comments or asked questions about, well, this is a 44-month project. Is there any way that we can pull in some of the benefits, because 44 months is a long time and the agency has quite a few issues that it's facing? And we went back and replanned the project in such a way as to identify the areas where RIMS is most efficient, our current legacy system is most efficient, and begin to replace those first. And what we found was that it's very good at making benefit payments once it knows what number to pay, and is not very good at figuring out what number to pay. And so we've readjusted our planning to take that into account so that we will be getting much more benefit much sooner within this 44-month project than originally planned. The chart on slide number 23 is just a depiction of how functionality will be transferred from off of RIMS and onto jClarity as the project progresses. On slide number 24 are some basic statistics about the project. The project costs are $25 to $27.5 million over the course of 44 months. We are contracting externally for technical project management support. We realized we didn't have those skills in-house for such a large project, so we've completed that contract, and we have a high-caliber technical project manager on board today. The implementation partner contract, this is the jClarity implementers. Their name is Covansis, is the name of the company, and we're in our final stages of contract development there. We expect that contract to be completed within the next 2 weeks or by the end of this month. And the project kickoff will follow soon after that. And that's when the 44 months will begin. In addition to the RIMS replacement or the RIMS conversion project, we have other IT or technical projects that are related to it that I wanted to bring to the committee's attention as well. We mentioned a little bit earlier about our stars and the fact that we were partially implemented at PERS. This project will more fully implement RSTARS, which is the state general ledger system, state finance system, and it will interface also with jClarity as well. We have as part of that project, there's a new comprehensive annual financial reporting package that we'll be implementing as well, and that's due to be done in November of 2005. We talked about the data cleansing effort that we had. It's a 7-person team that's now forming. We've recently hired the manager for that group, and we will be interviewing the other members within a week or so of that particular team. I can't overemphasize perhaps the need for that group. As you probably know, we're a financially oriented agency, and in those types of agencies, our lifeblood is data and clean data, so we need to really focus hard on that. We did some work analyzing our data types of issues and things with birth dates and home addresses and employment segments and those types of things. And we found the pace with which we were able to clean those up was far slower than we needed in order to be effective at this. So we decided at that time to establish a permanent group that focuses solely on keeping data clean. So data coming into the agency will be cleaned and verified, as well as the 60 years of information has been accumulating in the system as well. We mentioned the information security program already, as well as the data warehouse. So those are all major initiatives that we find are related to our rooms replacement or rooms conversion effort, but not necessarily part of the project. These are things that we would be doing regardless of replacing rooms. They're things that have to be done. And finally, on slide 26, I did want to just mention PERS involvement in the statewide initiatives that are underway that I'm sure have been brought before this committee before. As far as the scenic project, PERS is being a customer of DAS, and our RAMS application is run on the DAS mainframe. To that extent, we are participating in the scenic program. The JClarity environment that we are building is not slated to be one of the first 12, but it will probably be number 13, 14, or 15 soon after the first 12 go. And we're actually quite looking forward to that support at the data center within the state. As far as e-government goes, we have converted all of our external web pages to the government platform. We're using the e-government content management system as well, and we're working with IRMD to look for other opportunities to integrate our applications with the e-government platform. One thing that comes to mind is to perhaps provide for government employees links into JClarity when it's done into the pension system, so they take a look up their own accounts from the internal website from the internet. So we are looking for opportunities to provide that kind of information as well. And as far as cybersecurity goes, I've mentioned several times our information security program. It is aligned with the state's program, and as a matter of fact, our information security officer is one of the members of the Information Security Council that is hosted and run by IRMD. So with that completes my comments about the information technology environment, and I welcome any questions that you may have.
Questions?
Yes, thank you. First of all, most of the ones I had earlier were cleared up by the rest of your presentation, but I'd like to just get a little more understanding on what the issue is with these retirement calculations. I mean, this is clear back on slide 6, page 3, where you talk about 6,000 calculations in 04 required manual intervention and all that.
Chair Dunham and Representative Burley. When I talk to our benefits processing division, the folks that do this calculation, and I ask that very question, what is it in the system that forces this issue? The first thing I get is kind of rolled eyes, but the fact that there are so many different reasons for it, that each member seems to have a particular unique situation that hasn't been covered by either our AEF look back provision or our COLA freeze provision or some of those pieces of functionality that have yet to be programmed into the system. And so when a member comes up for retirement, since those provisions apply to many of the members, they can get only so far within the system creating the calculation, and then they have to finish it off by hand. So they're basically the inability of the system to create the calculation automatically is forcing those manual workarounds.
Chair Dillon, Representative Burley, certainly, as Jeff indicated, this was a system that was initially configured and installed back in the mid-1980s. And over time, of course, it tried to keep pace with changes that were implemented in the plan, both legislative change as well as rule changes. But eventually, they reached a point where they were thinking, this is going to be replaced. And so some of the functionality eventually started to erode because it was not kept updated. And so that's where all of a sudden now we're required again to do this manual intervention. And then also you've got the problem where a lot of the data was not clean coming in. And so we're missing employment segments. We're doing, you know, our paradigm in the past had always been, we'll correct everything when it's time to correct it. And for the most part, that was, you know, when you actually had to make a calculation. Well, if the system, both from a programming standpoint as well as from a data standpoint, hadn't been kept up to date or corrected, you can't use it to complete the calculation. Now we're going with the new system to a completely different paradigm. We're going to correct data and verify it as it comes in. And then, as Jeff indicated, a major initiative is this data cleansing team, because we don't want to migrate bad data from the RIM system onto the new JClarity system. It doesn't make any sense. As we're moving forward with the RIMS conversion, we're going to clean up the data as well as appropriately program it.
So,
yes, a follow up.
So, the JClarity software is just, as you said, it's off the shelf software, but it's written, designed exclusively for the purpose of doing retirement calculations.
That's correct.
I can add some history to this, if I may. When this project came forward in 1998, when I was a little baby and I first got here, they were looking at replacing the existing RIM system, and Clarity existed. It was a program, a pension system software package developed, and it was evaluated by the Public Employees Retirement System, but it wasn't web-enabled, as I remember. It wasn't ready for the next century, if you will. So it was very acceptable for stable retirement systems, but not looking forward to where this agency was heading. So they said, okay, well, that's off the table, even though it's well accepted and established and used by a lot of different states. The legislature stopped funding essentially the first decided it was going to build something from ground up. And as they kept coming back for more money and questions kept arising, the upshot was, whoa, this thing is looking to head past $100 million, and we don't even know if it's going to solve the problems, because the problem yet hadn't been carefully evaluated or the solution hadn't been defined. Subsequent to that, and I've been the PERS analyst since I got here, new people came on board, and they took a look at what was out there, and the folks that had developed Clarity had modified it. Correct me if I'm wrong here, folks, because I'm going on memory here, and web-enabled it. They recoded that whole system, and so when we looked at it about 3 years later, I guess, from when we decided, they said it wasn't going to be so effective, it met the needs. So JClarity is, I think the little J is for Java.
That's right.
Okay. And so this Clarity system was well established and has been around for quite a while. It's a pension administration system. But the J part brought it into the recent technological arena.
Well, so what are we doing for the future? I mean, you know, my crystal ball is not perfect, but, you know, 10, 15 years down the road, things may change again. What kind of, when the state buys JClarity license, I mean, what where do we get long-term from the developer of it as far as support and, you know, modifications down the road?
Chair Dellum and Representative Gurley, what is a key component to our implementation plan here? Two things. As far as the near to medium term, the application itself provides tools to quickly modify the system when legislative changes and those sorts of things come up. But more importantly than that, the plan includes for us, PERS, to integrate our own ISD staff into the implementation and customization, if you will, of the system as it's going in, so that we'll, at the end of the 44 months, we'll have a very well-trained staff in order to provide modifications moving into the future, as well as support structure that includes our current implementation partner as well. So if major modifications need to be done that perhaps the internal staff can't handle, we'll be able to work with our implementation partners as well to move forward. To follow up on some of Dallas's comments, the base Clarity code upon which the system is built has actually made several migrations. It started off as a mainframe-based system, then it moved to a client-server type of system, and then it moved to this web-enabled system. And so the creators of the software, Covantis, and that name has changed over the course of those years as well, but are very astute at migrating the core functionality as the technology changes as well, and we would expect them to do that in the future as well.
I'd like to follow up with a question. When we talk about full implementation, 44 months, and I hear that the data that you're going to enter is going to be clean, I would assume then that each account, each individual, has to be reviewed to be sure all paperwork is available, to be sure dates are right, the employment record is right. Do I understand that correctly, that all accounts will require almost a hand review or at least a quick peek? Or
Chair Dellum, reviewing each one by hand, I think, is quite an effort. The way we go about cleaning data, for example, first of all, the staff at the agency today keeps track of membership records that they know have some type of data problem, whether it's a birth date or a hire date or something like that. And when they have the chance to fix it, they'll go in and fix it. And some are more complex than that. Employment segments, for example, we have a number of members that move from employer to employer, and we need to make sure that hire dates and end dates line up and those kinds of things. They're very good at keeping track of those. So we have a list of identified problems that will be the first plan of attack. In addition to that, there are ways that we have to run queries and reports against data. Once we understand what made a particular data field in one member's record incorrect, perhaps it's a faulty calculation or something like that, we then run reports that then use the parameters associated with identifying that one individual to see how many others have that same type of problem, and we go through and fix it that way. So that's a calculated and planned approach to it. The other way that we get corrected information is when we send out statements, for example, and there's some information on those statements, and members read them, and they say, well, you know what, this particular piece of information isn't right, and then they'll notify us. So it's kind of a comprehensive way of doing it. Short of looking at each of our 300,000 members one by one by one, we want to be able to create clean data very quickly, and so we're using a more automatic and programmatic approach to it rather than a one-by-one review.
And a final question. I looked at slide 17, I believe it is, and we have another complicated. And I understand.
I have to look at that straight on.
I drew one of those one time, and I remember having to defend it. But in 44 months, we will have right now we have new management, new technology, a new direction, and new rules. And so this slide is really representative of this point in time. And we won't be looking like that in 44 months.
Chair Dillon, members of the committee, actually this slide represents what it looked like probably over the summertime as we were working with JLCIMT. As a matter of fact, some of these ovals on the left have come off as projects and others have been replaced. But you're correct. As we move through this process and begin to build the functionality into the new system, many of the projects, many of these 25 active projects that I note down at the bottom there, will go away. There will be no need for them anymore because the new system will have already incorporated those issues. And so we'll probably look more like slide number 18, where there's always one or two or three projects that are currently active. But the key point on the difference between 17 and 18 is that the interim solution boxes that you see there no longer exist. The manual workarounds and the double work that we talked about earlier will go away because we'll be able to handle the functionality in the new system.
I myself wish you well and anxiously await the 45th month when you come back and show us a new slide. I always ask the question, and you've already answered it, but for the record, we have Don Fleming and Mike Fries overseeing everything. They're an integral part of the plan, and this technology is going to move to scenic quite handsomely. And you've answered that, but I'm going to look at you and have you say yes for the record.
Yes.
Thank you. And another area that we're concerned about generally, and you've also answered that question, is security. And Don in particular and Mike in general, they've looked over your security plan and they're satisfied that we've got the best security we can at each stage of the game.
Our security has been vetted through the Information Security Office that is headed by Teresa Massey, but it is the state office, and she has reviewed that.
And any other questions? Thank you very much for the explanation. And you have taken on. How long have you been there?
Mr. Chair, I've been there 7 months, I think, 8 months maybe, and Jeff, I think on April 15th, we'll be there a year.
Yeah. This is day 48 for me, so.
Nothing but opportunities to excel, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, and the explanation of course was most valuable.
Thank you.
And with that, we will close this meeting of the Information Management and Technology Committee.
It was a year ago today that Mike Fries, Jeff and Reese, and the light went up to...